speaker is about ammonia volatilization from an innovative system for optimizing nitrogen fertilizer application to sugarcane crops, presented by Peter Thorburn.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for coming in and sparing me some of your time. So we're here talking something a little bit different for US, sugarcane and nitrogen. And co-authors, generally from my group, although Rebecca's a hydrologist who has helped us with some of the work. So, you know, I think it's a really good question to ask, why should we care about nitrogen and sugarcane? Why are you people here? Well, it's a big biomass crop, takes up, you know, fairly reasonable quantities of nitrogen. Obviously, you can't keep doing that forever. Greenhouse gas emissions are also really important in, increasingly important in sugarcane because of its role in biofuels. And the studies on greenhouse gas emissions from sugarcane systems show that they're, you know, 4 to 30 times higher than the IPCC default values. And so if you wrap this into a life cycle assessment of ethanol from sugarcane, it's the biggest source of greenhouse gas emissions in the production of ethanol. So that's a really interesting reason to be interested. And, you know, many people will say that, you know, controlling nitrous oxides is a lot about nitrogen management 101, doing it properly. Water pollution is very important too, particularly where we are. That's actually the biggest issue driving our work in Australia. See this little photo down here. Not only does that contain sediments, which are from grazing lands, but it contains a lot of dissolved nitrogen, which is very toxic in a coral reef ecosystem. And there are water quality issues in the US as well. And if you start thinking about, and a lot of these things I've said, there's a really substantial body of literature that's in micro print down the bottom there to substantiate all these things. These are not wild claims. And so if you start thinking about, well, you know, the crop needs nitrogen, but it's got all these nitrogen-related problems, what do you do about it? And you think through it. Well, you know, I suppose I'd propose that the current philosophies really are systematically driving over-fertilisation of cane, and that's sort of happening for a couple of reasons. One is poorly developed recommendations, and so that might be relevant, say, in China and India, where application rates are up to 300 kilograms per hectare. And if you're not familiar with sugarcane, you'll come to get an idea of how big an over-application that is. And the other thing is target yields. Fertilising to a target yield, and no farmer ever sets a conservative target. So that very philosophy itself, while good at perhaps providing inputs to maximise yield, it also drives over-application of inputs when you don't reach those yields. And the yield gaps in sugarcane are quite substantial in most parts of the world. So the result of all this is that you're going to have a system that won't meet these increasingly important environmental requirements around greenhouse gas emissions and water pollution. And a lot of the philosophy about managing nitrogen sugarcane essentially has been transported from temperate grains. And so you've got to sit back and think, well, is that really appropriate? So, you know, can we do it differently in sugarcane? So if you think through the ecology of the crop, well, for a start, it's not an annual, it's semi-perennial. So, you know, fallows occur very sporadically. You know, the plant's there for 12 months of the year. It's also very, very deep-rooted. You know, it's quite well recorded that in the absence of subsoil limitations, roots can grow down 3-4 metres. You know, it's operating in warm and moist environments. And you can look at that and say, well, that actually gives you a lot of potential for leaching of nitrogen, therefore we should put more on, which doesn't make sense in environmental context. But there's plenty of studies around actually that show the immobile, you know, really substantial immobilisation in that warm, moist environment the nitrogen cycle is spinning around really quickly there, so you can suck up a lot of, mobilise a lot of nitrogen fertiliser and then subsequently bleed it back out through mineralisation. And with that combined with the deep roots suggests that you could, should be able to trap nitrogen in the root zone. Okay, so what's all this mean? Well, we think that it means that thinking of nitrogen management in cane more like you would for a horticultural orchard or forest, which is around an input-output balance system, actually makes sense and some, has some ideas. And so about 8 years ago, we sort of came up with this idea. So you harvest sugar cane, and in most countries, that sugar cane goes to a mill, so you know how much was harvested, very good records there. So then, if you take that data on the yield and you can develop some sort of factor linking how much nitrogen might have been exported, that gives you a ballpark of how much nitrogen you might need to replace to maintain the balance. And so we went through that and we did some work on from first principles, and we've come up with this range of factors, which essentially sort of distills down to about a kilogram of nitrogen applied for every tonne of cane that was harvested. And the reason for saying how much did I take off last season is to get away from this trying to predict the yield. So we're saying, you know, if you don't put quite enough on, that there's enough reserves in the soil to buffer the crop. And there's lots of studies that show it's really hard to get nitrogen responses within a few years of a reduction of fertiliser. So this made sense to us from first principles and from what was in the literature. So we call this a nitrogen replacement system because we're talking about replacing the nitrogen, and we set about testing it. So we ran 11 experiments in five regions of contrasting climate, so from the dry subtropics with supplementary irrigation to the dry tropics fully irrigated to the wet tropics, and by wet we're talking about up to 4,000 millimetres of rain in some cases. We didn't want this to be a research station thing. This had to be out on the farm, because in research stations you get potential yields, which will say that you should put lots of nitrogen on, and that doesn't translate. So it had to be in farmers' fields with all the good things and bad things that they do. So if they didn't control weeds properly, which hurt the crop, we wanted to know that. This is something about going out in practice. And we compared the replacement right with what the farmers were currently doing, which was, in most of our cases, fairly close to industry guidelines and recommendations. Wherever we could convince the farmers, we also put in a low rate to really try and stress the system, a low rate being about 40 kilograms per hectare. And then we tried to quantify the balances, and at one site we actually had direct measurements of dissolved nitrogen lost in runoff because of the impacts around the reef. So, in summary, across all experiments, we applied 35% less fertiliser than what the farmers with their current practice. The cane and sugar yields were not significantly different. In fact, there was a trend for improvement in the yields with this replacement system, and I'll speak more about that. When we look at nitrogen surpluses, the nitrogen surplus, and hence in the long term the nitrogen loss, was reduced by 60%. So, you know, everything's looking pretty good so far. We also examined soil nitrogen and carbon, and we could find no evidence of soil nitrogen being depleted. And not just doing total carbon, we looked at labile carbon as well, and we could find no evidence of a crash in labile carbon. And given that our plant production, which is pretty important in putting carbon back in the soil, wasn't affected, that's perhaps not so surprising, but a lot of the sceptics didn't think that would happen. But one really surprising thing we found is that the amount of nitrogen in the cane biomass was lower than we'd expected. You know, we'd done a big literature review, and early work had sort of indicated that if you had to pick a number, about 0.9 kilograms of N in a tonne of cane, fresh weight, was the number. We're running at about two-thirds of that in all our experiments, but also across all the treatments. That wasn't responsive to nitrogen rate. So I said about the trend to yields increasing through time. We've got this pattern of a significant decrease in yield in the first crop. and the same whether you're talking about cane yield or sugar yield. The decrease, so zero is the yields are the same, so this is our treatment was less than the farmer's treatment. Pretty wide error bars. We start to get a fair bit of variability in this second crop. So, okay, you can say big fat error bars, it's not significant, but it's still lower. And then by the third crop and the fourth crop, the error bars tightened up and the yields are positive, such that if you sum across those 4 years, those four crops, in this case, you're getting about 0.15 of a tonne of sugar per hectare higher, which you translate that into a few hundred thousand hectares of sugar cane, that's actually quite a bit of extra income, and it also comes at a lower cost because your fertiliser prices are lower. Why? This response is pretty positive. Why? What's happening? We don't know. I would hypothesise that the fact that we're going in with lower rates and variable rates means that the cane's experiencing some nitrogen stress and it's responding by perhaps putting out a deeper root system. We know cane really, like all plants, responds to water stress by doing that, and there's some irrigation strategies that we've played with in Australia by adding a bit of stress in, but we've also got some evidence of that. There is some evidence in literature of nitrogen stress promoting deeper rooting and more efficient acquisition. And so maybe our thing about the root system, we're exploiting that. But the other issue that comes out of this is that, you know, if you're an extension service or something and you're just going to run a test over 1 or 2 years, which certainly in Australia is a traditional way that people would do nutrition studies, well, it's all going to be bad news. And we're having a little bit of trouble with this at the moment because some of the people who test this out, you know, after 2 years, they get discouraged and say, oh, blow it, I'm, you know, going home. So, and the other thing is, because we can't explain what's happening here, it's very hard to predict it either mechanistically or empirically. I said we also, at our northernmost site, measured runoff and chemicals in runoff over the 3 years there, and you can see, you know, the getting towards that sort of 60% reduction in nitrogen, dissolved nitrogen runoff that we're talking about in terms of the surplus. So, in conclusion, you know, the basis of our work is that we believe that current thinking about, you know, nitrogen is really important in sugarcane these days, and we've got to think about it differently, otherwise we're just going to be in a big pickle. Our results of testing these concepts we had is saying that it's possible to align the inputs with the outputs. You don't have to keep on thinking about future production. We had crops that were growing 20% higher than the yield of the previous crop, so inherently you're under-fertilised. There's more detail on that. But you've got to start looking at these systems in the long term to allow the plant to respond. Potential for more sugar, more profits and better environmental performance. But it's also saying let's align our inputs with our outputs in the long term. Let's not sort of worry about, well, I might lose a tonne of cane this particular season. So I'd like to thank everyone who's been involved. Here's a couple of the farmers who actually went and dug holes for us, which is really nice. We've got good support from the industry and the research arm of the sugar industry as well. There's my contacts and a sort of a pretty bull-faced plug for the results of the work that came out in Plant and Soil a little bit before, and the water quality work is in Press and Marine Pollution Bulletin. Thanks very much.
The
across all the sites, probably about 80-85 tonnes per hectare.
Sorry,
across all the sites, possibly around 80 or 85 tonnes per hectare.
Okay,
so 4 or 5. Yeah. So we lost that decrease in the first year, so getting 85 and we were getting 81, which is actually fairly hard to detect the significance in that from plot to plot. But it's still not good for them, but it goes away. Delhi.
Do you think that there's a potential future for the enhanced efficient fertilizer in the region that control the lace or is it not efficient?
Yeah. You know, when issues like the standard things to promote increased nitrogen use efficiency, like splitting fertilizer or nitrification inhibitors, slow-release fertilizers, when you apply them in a system that's fundamentally over-fertilized, so a 35% reduction, you flip that round, it's 1.5 times over-fertilized, then you can't... The system's so flush with nitrogen, you can't see it. I think, combining this thinking with the enhanced efficiency fertilizers might be a way of either making those levels more sustainable through good years and bad years, or even allowing you to cut those replacement factors down.
One quick question. What is a total recovery, you believe, the cumulative recovery in nitrogen system?
I had a PhD student who ran an experiment in the wet tropics. That was 3,000 millimetres rainfall. Over 2 years, we recovered 95 and in one case 100% of the N15. But a lot of that was in the soil. And this is where, if you actually look at the sugarcane nitrogen recovery literature, everyone says sugarcane only recovers, some figures are single digits, 5%, up to 30% at the end. Therefore, it has, so this is N15 tagged nitrogen fertiliser for those who aren't following. So therefore, the plant has low recovery, environmental losses must be high, and that's what's driving a lot of the thinking behind over-fertilisation. But if you start looking at what you can recover in the soil as well, I'm yet to read a study where the recovery is much less than 70%. So...